Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Welcome to today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is my colleague Joe Healy, and we are here to wrap up the fifth weekend of college baseball from around the country. It was a pretty exciting weekend, all things considered. Not even all things considered. It's just a pretty exciting weekend. You had the number one team in the country, Notre Dame, getting swept by Louisville. Really loud statement from the Cardinals. You had the start of conference play for the SEC, for Conference USA, for the Big West. The ACC had a lot of things going on. It was just a fun weekend. If you squeezed some college baseball in this weekend, I'm sure you came away pretty enjoyed it with what you got. So we're going to break all of that down here today on the Baseball America College Podcast. And Joe, we had a great weekend of college baseball. I understand that there was some basketball being played and maybe the NFL had some news, but it was a great weekend of college baseball.
Indeed it was. There was some basketball. I did hear a little something about that. And I did partake a little bit in the basketball here and there, to the point where I posted this in our BA Slack, but I've learned to give listeners an idea, there was that podcast I missed a couple weeks ago. I was pretty under the weather with a pretty bad cold. And that was during conference tournament week. And so I watched a lot of basketball that week because I was just laying on the couch. And so that in the NCAA tournament now, I watched a decent amount of basketball in the last few weeks. And I've learned, and I don't know why I hadn't made this connection before, but I've learned, and I'm curious while I say this, Teddy, for like the baseball equivalent of this. So in football, you've got these kind of like super in terms of the way they would approach a game, like football announcers tend to be like a pretty conservative lot. Like they want you to always kick the field goal in the red zone, you know, take the points, they say, or, you know, punt if you're, you know, on your end of the field and it's fourth and three, like they're always going to want you to punt. And I found that the basketball equivalent of that is announcers always want, if a team is chasing points late, they always want the teams to, quote, get a quick two instead of settle for a three and extend the game. That's like their just go-to. They always want the most conservative thing there, which is, just get a quick two and let's foul again and like keep playing this chasing points game into perpetuity, it seems like. And I was thinking about like what the baseball equivalent of that, like maybe it's something to do with like moving runners over, maybe.
Yeah, it's 100% that or beating the shift.
Yeah, it's got to be one of those two things. Yeah, I mean, I don't know that, you know, I feel like baseball being the sport that it is, for better or for worse, has maybe moved announcers along a little quicker from that kind of talking point. I think what it is now is, I think what I would say now is that I think even the announcers who are big, you know, get them on, get them over, get them in type of people are just aware that that's a larger debate in baseball now. And so I think maybe they go into that prepared to debate that point right away. Whereas, you know, basketball announcers say, oh, get a quick two, or football announcers say, oh, take the points. And they really don't get a lot of argument on that. Like it's just kind of like given as gospel a little bit. Maybe that's where the difference is, but you're right. It probably has not abated at all, but but I was just prepared to exclusively report that I have solved what the basketball version of this is, and that everybody wants a quick two.
Well, the good news is Joe Buck is a great podcast listener here to the Baseball America College
podcast.
That's
right.
So Joel, let me know. We'll have an answer for you on Thursday. So we'll see what he says.
That's right.
ESPN's new Monday Night Football announcer is I believe the report.
That's right. Goes. We're in the wrong.
Maybe
business.
Troy Aikman has some thoughts too. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, we are certainly. What I've learned from that is that. You know, I went to college to be a broadcaster, and boy, I should have stuck with that. You know, shifting to the writing thing was apparently the wrong move based on the types of salaries that are getting thrown around these days. Oof. Not that they don't, good for them. Like, I am all for people in media get like securing the bag, but man, Tony Romo really, really set that market high.
No doubt about that. Well, I don't know how to transition us back to
that's rough.
Diamond. Joe,
but yes, it was a good weekend.
because a little further afield than I know how to get back from. So I'll just say, let's go to Louisville. This weekend, the biggest, loudest statement came from Louisville, where the Cardinal swept Notre Dame. It was a pretty compelling series, from what I could tell. I wasn't there, obviously. I was in Baton Rouge, but in checking in on the series, it always seemed to be pretty compelling. There was a crazy. It was a crazy start to the weekend there, as Louisville beat Notre Dame 16-11. That was just kind of a wild back and forth affair that Notre Dame pulled away late on. They then won and clinched the series with an 8-1 win on Saturday. And 8-1 sounds like they had a, you know, healthy margin and they were in control all game. Well, it wasn't like that. It was 1-1 until Louisville scored 7 in the 8th. But again, they won a shootout in the first game. They won a pitcher's duel, which turned into not a pitcher's duel late, but they won that in game 2. And then in game 3, they came back. They were down in the 8th inning. They get a 3-run homer in the 8th inning with 2 outs to go on to a 7-5 win, get a sweep, and what a start to ACC play for Louisville as they sweep the Irish. And you know, their offense had been really good going into this weekend. They ranked 3rd in the country in scoring. But they were facing a very, very good pitching staff in Notre Dame. Notre Dame had the second best ERA in the nation going into this weekend, and Louisville's bats definitely won the matchup there.
Yeah, no doubt about that at this point. You know, they really did the thing to Notre Dame that we were kind of waiting on a team to do to Notre Dame last year and just never happened, I guess, until the Super Regional against the future, what turned out to be national champions. But we kind of, with the way Notre Dame pitched last year, where they were using really 6 guys and it was mostly pitch to contact guys. And we kind of just kept looking around like, is anybody going to do anything against them? And they just really never did. And this was the type of weekend that I always last year, and to Notre Dame's credit, didn't happen, but I always kind of assumed would happen and never did. And this year, you know, pretty early in the season, we've had that kind of weekend, even though Notre Dame's pitching staff is, I think, better this year than it was last year on the whole, because they do have some different looks this year. And Louisville really just was able to punish their pitching. And to your point, you know, the middle game, for example, John Michael Bertrand was pretty solid and they got to the bullpen, but on the whole, they really had a field day with Notre Dame's pitching. And I think, you know, the Louisville is well on its way to making me just dead wrong. You know, I said that after I saw them in Tampa, I was like, I'm just not convinced that this offense is like an Omaha level offense. And that was, you know, that it's so far that has been their worst weekend. So I guess I just saw it a bad time. And, you know, in hindsight also, you know, UConn's pitching staff really good. I guess there may be some reasons for that, but they are on the way to kind of making me be wrong there. This lineup has been really, really good. It was really good over the weekend. They hit over 300 as a team on the weekend, took advantage of some free passes issued by Notre Dame pitching. what I was right about in the, from the start, though, is I've always said that I wasn't sure this lineup's high end was, you know, an Omaha lineup. But from the beginning, it has been clear that this is a lineup that's going to do a lot of different things pretty well. And I think you do still see that where they've got some power, but they've also got some guys who are dynamic and in typical Louisville fashion are going to run the bases and make things happen on the bases. And they've got some interchangeable pieces. So I think I've always liked that from the start, but being this type of offense was not necessarily something that I saw early. Additionally, I would say that I think just as big a development, just as big a development over the weekend was, you know, the pitching performance of Jared Poland. You know, we've talked a lot coming into the season about what can we expect on the Louisville pitching staff. After last year, we learned that we couldn't expect anything from the Louisville pitching staff because it was so up and down. But they've been fairly solid. It feels like that's firming up. And to have Jared Poland, a guy who has had an extremely up and down career, I think that's to put it mildly, to do what he did with the 7 shutout innings and 10 strikeouts, you know, I think is a huge step for this pitching staff as they continue to try to figure out exactly who they are. It's a pitching staff that if the offense continues to hit like this, they're not going to have to be excellent. They're just going to have to be pretty good. And over the weekend, they were pretty good and showed signs of in spots being excellent.
Yeah, the offense is definitely multiple, as they would say in football. I mean, you have Christian Napsick, who's their leading hitter, and he's hitting .427 and has 11 stolen bases. And you know, Louisville under Dan McDonald wants to run, wants to be aggressive, wants to force the issue on the bases. And with, you know, Napsick at the you know, having the kind of on base success that he is, like that's definitely happening with him. And they've got some other guys with speed, but then they also have, you know, good power in there. Ben Metzger is up to 9 homers. He homered this weekend. Cam Masterman has 6, and Dalton Rushing has 5. They've just got a lot of different ways they can beat you. And, you know, Dan McDonald at the end of the weekend wasn't thrilled with, you know, the way that they ran the bases even. So, you know, I know that, you know, you're always going to be looking for ways to improve, but, you know, he takes that very personally because that's kind of like his area of the offense that he works with, you know, but having scored all the runs that they scored this weekend, you know, he's still looking at him like, well, maybe we could have had more. So yeah, you mentioned Poland. He was outstanding. Michael Prosecki has been really good establishing himself as a closer, which has always been a hallmark of a great Louisville pitching staff, is that they have a lockdown guy at the back end. Prosecki has 6 saves this season. You know, it seems like he's really settling into that role. You know, so you have to be very impressed with the way Louisville played to go out and get this sweep. And, you know, to your point, Joe, like they didn't play that great on opening weekend. They know that. And, you know, sometimes that happens to Louisville. They, you know, they are a northern team pretty generally, and they always go out and play on the road, and you know, you just never know how that weekend's going to go. But they went back home after opening weekend, got right kind of out of the spotlight, because they weren't ranked in opening, or you know, in the preseason, because the way the opening weekend went, nobody was really paying that much attention to Louisville on a national basis. And you know, they got right against teams that, you know, nobody was going to be paying attention to them for playing. It was Dartmouth and Akron the first 2 weeks back home. And, you know, but they use that to build the momentum. They, then they beat TCU and they beat Michigan, and they built into this, the start of ACC play, and they come out and they're ready to go. And they, you know, they go out and they beat the reigning ACC champs. I mean, it was really well done. The kind of growth that Louisville has seen over the last month.
Yeah. I mean, I think this also is the type of series where, because I think, you know, you and I clearly, and, you know, we still have Notre Dame ranked 11th. I mean, just outside the top 10 ahead of Louisville pointedly. Right. So we still think a lot of Notre Dame. So I think for Louisville, I think this is the type of series that can really change the trajectory of what they're capable of. Now, obviously that's not going to be determined by us. That's going to be determined by them, you know, and how many games they win. But in terms of perception, like, I really do think this changes from, I don't think we were thinking, especially now to the first weekend of the season, even going into the series. I think you and I probably, if you'd have really pinned us down and forced us to guess what Louisville is, I think we would have said, well, this is probably a two seed in a regional, like not really sure they can host. But even if we were to be doubters at this point, and we're not based on what we've seen, but even if we were doubters at this point, you'd have to say, well, I mean, just based on them winning all the games we should expect them to win in the ACC, having swept Notre Dame is just a real resume changer. So it's still early to be doing that hardcore analysis like that, but there's no denying that it really does kind of change the trajectory of what they're capable of from an ACC record standpoint and from a resume building standpoint.
Before we move on to the Notre Dame side of this, I will say, as good as Notre Dame played this weekend, you know, I mentioned Dan McDonald, you know, pointed out that he felt like they could have run the bases a bit better. I'll also say Louisville can tighten up its defense. They made 5 errors on the weekend. They're fielding 963 this year. Like that's rather unlike Louisville as well. If they can, again, if they can tighten that, they'll be in a better spot. Louisville's also played just one true road game this year. So we'll see how they handle going on the road, because this is a team that always plays really well at Jim Patterson Stadium. And, you know, I'm curious to see what it looks like in true road settings. We'll see a true road setting this week as they go to BC, but there will be tougher road tests down the line. And, I'll just be curious about that, but you know, right now, they're looking outstanding, and while they still have some things that they want to work on, so does literally every team in the country. And Louisville has to be happy right now, sitting at 16-4 following that weekend. Okay, Joe. So from the Notre Dame standpoint, this was a pretty significant setback. They had been flying into the weekend at 12-1. They, you know, they had the best defense in the country. They ranked second in the nation in ERA, and that got punctured in a pretty big way this weekend. You know, Louisville dropping 16 runs on Friday, and Notre Dame had a lot of issues just in terms of controlling, you know, the strike zone. They walked far too many batters this weekend. That's part of the reason why Louisville was able to pile up the runs that they piled up. But, you know, as bad as this looks, it also was a situation where Notre Dame had a chance to win at least 2 of these 3 games. You know, they had a chance to come back against Louisville on Friday, but, you know, they were down 7 going into the 7th inning, I think it was. So that one would have been tough, but you know, they're tied at 1 in the 8th on Saturday, and Louisville gets a great play from third baseman Ben Metzinger to keep the game tied, and then, you know, Louisville flips it in the bottom of the 8th. You know, if Notre Dame maybe gets that run to push ahead, you know, how does that change the dynamic of the last couple innings of that game? And then they're winning the game on Sunday in the 8th inning, and Louisville isn't, or Louisville doesn't go quietly, and they go on to win the game. So it was one of those series where, yeah, it was a sweep, but you could easily have imagined the result being much different. It just wasn't. And, you know, Notre Dame now has to go and figure out why Louisville got the big hits, got the clutch plays, and they didn't.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, I'm with you in that I think there's a charitable interpretation of this series that says that, you know, Notre Dame was really, you know, getting a couple of outs away from having this be a different outcome, you know, and in the finale, that just not giving up a 3-run home run to Isaac Humphrey late, you know, you get him out instead of allowing that, and it's a different ball game. And we're,
yeah, that was a 2-out homer too. Yeah.
That, yeah. So, I mean, you just, you know, there are just one or two plays that really changed the entire trajectory of that series. And that's obviously the loser's lament, right? It's like, well, we were so close, you know, because like we could do this in any number of games. But I do think it rings true here. There's a reason why we didn't really hammer Notre Dame here. You know, history being a part of it too, right? I mean, this is a team that we had a lot of belief in coming into the season. But I find it interesting that one of the, from a, just a narrative perspective, which I hate to use that phrase in narrative perspective, but just sounds so smarmy. But I do think it is interesting that for this Notre Dame team, I mean, this is, I think, you know, the big speed bump they hit last year was just in the super regionals. Then your season is over, right? I mean, that's just the finality of that. But this is really, over the last 2 years, the first time, and you could even throw 2020 in there, even though it was obviously a very short season. This is really kind of, in terms of adversity in season, like this is really the first opportunity, unless I'm just missing an obvious example from last year. I mean, this is really the first time we're going to get to see Notre Dame and this group really deal with in-season adversity in the form of wins and losses. That's not to say it was always easy necessarily, because we don't know what goes inside on inside those four walls, but they've just never, the last 2 years, haven't had a series like this. And we haven't seen how they bounce back and what they do about it. And I just find that endlessly fascinating, because it's a test for a team that we know pretty well at this point, because it is largely the same group of guys. This is something we've not really seen them had to deal with.
No, under Link Jarrett, Notre Dame has not, this hasn't happened. They lost a series last year to Florida State. It was their only series loss. They didn't lose a series in 2020. Obviously very brief season, but you know, that didn't happen. So this is only the third time, if you count supers, that, you know, Link Jarrett has lost a series at Notre Dame. And it's the first time that they've been swept. And last year when they lost to Florida State, Notre Dame was already pretty secure at the top of the ACC. I don't remember precisely what the standings said at the time, but you know, they were in first place when that series started last year, and I'm pretty sure they were still in first place even after the Noles won that series. This is a different deal, and Notre Dame has a chance this weekend. They go home. They haven't really been home much yet. They've played one home game so far this season, and they go home this week for five games, Tuesday, the weekend series, and then the following midweek game is a home game. They got to get right this week against Northwestern and Virginia Tech. If they do that, if they just take advantage of the chance to play a home weekend for the first time all season, you know, I think this doesn't have to be anything more than a speed bump for Notre Dame, but they can't let it linger. They can't let Louisville beat them twice, as they say, and all the rest of that. But they clearly have some things that got exposed this weekend to work on. And, you know, we'll just have to see what the Irish do, you know, going forward with all of that. Okay. So with Notre Dame losing, that means there's a new number one team, the Baseball America Top 25, for the second week in a row. Ole Miss moves up to number one. Ole Miss this weekend opened SEC play with a series win at Auburn. The Rebs are 15-4 overall. They go on the road, win that series at Auburn. It was a kind of weird offensive series. Ole Miss won blowouts on Thursday and Saturday, bookending an Auburn blowout win of their own. In the middle game, it was just one of those series down there on the plains. But Ole Miss gets it done. They win 13-6 and 15-2. The loss was a 19-5 loss. And in some ways, that is who Ole Miss is right now. They're a super offensive team. Have to love the lineup. Still working through some things on the mound. I don't know. We've talked about Ole Miss before. This weekend was kind of everything that Ole Miss has been this year. You know, they get it done thanks to a really good team offensive performance. You know, if you look at the Ole Miss stat sheet, it's no one guy is really having an amazingly standout season. They're just like eight or nine guys having really, really strong seasons to this point.
Yeah, I think you put it right, where this series was everything that Ole Miss has been so far this season. You know, everything that makes them a contender for an SEC title, and everything that makes their fan base probably pretty nervous and makes them vulnerable against the right teams, right? They scored a whole bunch of runs, and then they had one game where they gave up a whole bunch of runs. And because it was an Auburn team that's not really ready to compete at the same level, that was enough on this weekend. Them being number one strikes me as the type of situation where, you know, they earned being number one because they continue to win series, and also because we thought a lot of them coming into the season, so they started the season ranked high. They are not necessarily number one because the resume suggests that they are the number one team in the country. But at this point,
it doesn't suggest that they're not, though. Like, that you can find teams that have bigger, louder wins on their resume. But this is a team that went on the road to UCF, went on the road to Auburn. There aren't that many high-end teams like this that have four true road wins against major conference competition.
Right. Yeah, it's the thing about it is, though, is that they'll have, you know, if this team is the number one team in the country, I mean, it is in a literal sense right now, but if this team is really the type of team that can actually be a defending number one, as opposed to just moving up into number one, you know, a home series against Tennessee is a good way to prove it. And that's what they've got coming. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, at the end of the week in the preview podcast. But, a team that will have its opportunities to prove what it is and isn't. And so far they've just done enough. And so that offense continues to roll, even though it hasn't been easy. They've once again dealt with injuries, but they're kind of getting, they're getting some performances from some guys that maybe they weren't necessarily banking on. And when you and I had Mike Bianco on the podcast over the offseason back in the fall, one of the good problems to have situations that he had is, you know, we've probably got guys that we would love to get, you know, there are guys we'd love to get at bats that I just don't know that we're going to be able to get at bats for. And a couple of the guys that he mentioned were, you know, Kemp Alderman and Reagan Burford. Alderman, I think he thought of as more of somebody who was penciled in somewhere, but Burford was a guy that he seemed like he was already lamenting the fact that it just may not be in the cards for him to get a lot of at bats. And lo and behold, those two guys have been right in the middle of it for them. So a lot of depth, and that really plays in the SEC, where you're going to get a little bit beat up and guys are going to go through slumps. And so they're really set up well from that standpoint. The pitching obviously is more of an open question and feels like the kind of thing that they're just going to be tinkering with until basically right up until the end of the season.
Yeah. And it should be surprising that Ole Miss is trying to figure some things out on the mound. They lost Doug McKenzie, Gunnar Hugland, and Taylor Broadway from last year's team. So that's your top two starters and your closer, all of whom pitched at an All-American level. They all three would have been All-Americans if Hugland had stayed healthy. You know, he was a first-round draft pick. Those guys are all gone. They are still trying to figure out how the pieces fit together. They got a really nice start from Jack Doherty in the finale on Saturday, making just his second start of the year. He was the best starter. Like, his start was the best start that Ole Miss got on the weekend. They got enough from the bullpen. You're starting to see the pieces they want to use in the bullpen. Now they just need either a couple more bullpen pieces or John Gaddis and Derek Diamond, who were the first two starters of the series who didn't make it through the fourth inning. They need more length from those guys, or again, just more bullpen arms to step up. Either one would be fully acceptable. However you get to the 27 outs, you know, there are many ways to do it. Obviously, they just have to find the right formula. And you know, to this point, they've been able to do it. Eventually know that they're going to have to, you know, the pitching staff is going to have to pick up the offense. Hasn't happened yet, really, but that day is coming, certainly, and it'll be very interesting to see how Ole Miss handles it when it does. But this is just the second time in program history that Ole Miss is ranked number one in the Baseball America Top 25. Last year it happened coming out of opening weekend, and it only lasted 1 week because they lost a home series to UCF. Like Joe mentioned, they have a home series against Tennessee this weekend, a streaking Tennessee club, very impressive Tennessee club. So we'll see what Ole Miss can do with the number one ranking this year in what looks to be maybe the best series that we've had to this point in this college baseball season.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, you know, this is a, we've had plenty of interesting, surprising, illuminating results already this season. And yet it feels like we, to some degree, I mean, there was some stuff, I guess, opening weekend, but you know, I think specifically like the Oklahoma State Vanderbilt series, which now feels like it happened just ages ago because of everything that's happened since. But it feels like it took us getting into conference play for most everybody at this point and getting a series like this to really, to give us that kind of marquee series. Still feels like, I guess what I'm saying is it still feels like, and perhaps Ole Miss and Tennessee is going to give us that. We're still waiting on like our first kind of heavyweight fight weekend series. And I think it probably just took getting into conference play for that to happen, because those series, I guess, take on a little bit of a different shape. But it does feel like maybe we are in for that this weekend, because I've kind of felt a little bit, and this is an ethereal thing, it's not really something you can necessarily, quantify. That's the word I'm looking for there. But it does feel like we've gotten to this point of the season, and we're still kind of waiting on that kind of series that really captivates us in the way that this one might this weekend.
All right. We'll talk more about SEC opening weekend. Hopefully we learned a lot this weekend, I feel like, and we'll get into all of that here in a second. But first, check this out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. That's why I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America. It allows me to do everything on one website. I get quality candidates. I can schedule them. I can interview them. I can screen them. I can send messages to them, all within Indeed. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
All right, Joe, we talked about Ole Miss beating Auburn and Ole Miss moving up to number one in the country. They that was but one of seven SEC series, and we're not going to go through all seven of them. But there were, you know, with the start of conference play, there were lessons to be learned here in SEC play. And for me, the lesson number one that we learned, not only this weekend, but this weekend helped drive the point home, I think, is that the SEC West came into the season with four teams ranked in the top 10. You had Ole Miss, Arkansas, Mississippi State, and LSU all in the top 10. As it stands now, Ole Miss is the number one team in the country, and Arkansas is sitting at number six. Those two teams have done what they were expected to do. Mississippi State is unranked. LSU is unranked right now. No other team from the SEC West is in the top 25, let alone in the top 10. It's Ole Miss and Arkansas, and that's it. The SEC West last year spent all but 1 week holding the number one spot in the Baseball America top 25. And, it's not there now. It's just a very different spot than we thought the the SEC West was going to be at this point in the year.
Yeah, I think that's right. To put it simply, there's just kind of with that group, what strikes me is just a real dearth of complete teams. I mean, we just got done talking about Ole Miss as number one, sure, but like there are definitely still questions there, right? I think Arkansas is pretty similar, although I was heartened from an Arkansas standpoint to see what Jackson Wiggins did over the weekend. It seemed like they really just kind of swept, and I didn't end up watching really much of that series for this reason. Like it just feels like they were very businesslike in sweeping Kentucky. They didn't really mess around. There wasn't a whole lot of drama there. And Kentucky's good enough that if you're not really prepared to do that, Kentucky could give you problems. And so I thought that was impressive. But I think that the theme here is kind of that these are just, I don't know that in that bunch we talked about that there's a complete team right now in that bunch. And some of that is not necessarily their fault, right? If Mississippi State had a healthy, now they have obviously offensive issues as well, but we came into the season, I think, thinking that that had a chance to be maybe the most well-rounded team of this bunch. Maybe they certainly didn't have the best offense of the bunch, did Mississippi State. But the combination of a good enough offense and a pitching staff led by Landon Sims gave them the opportunity to be kind of a unit that was without a weakness, even if their strengths weren't as strong as some others. Now, that obviously has not come to pass due to injuries, primarily with Landon Sims, and the offense hasn't been as good as we anticipated, perhaps. But to me, it just stands out as a division that doesn't really have a complete team yet. And, you know, you start looking at other, like the other side of the SEC and compare that to a Tennessee team that we also had questions about on the mound. But as we briefly alluded to in the podcast preview in the weekend, like those freshman pitchers, man, like they're really coming on strong for Tennessee. And perhaps that's a team that's a little more well-rounded than we thought. Vanderbilt also kind of quietly, you know, they took care of business with Missouri and they haven't played anybody since Oklahoma State to start the season. And they lost that series, but like, don't look now, but like Carter Holton's numbers as a freshman are incredible for Vanderbilt. And that offense is pretty dynamic as well and can beat you in a lot of different ways. And so you compare the two divisions right now. And right now it looks like the East has a couple of teams. Oh, and by the way, that's to say nothing of Florida, which after a series loss to Liberty to begin the season has been pretty solid. The East is looking like it has the teams that are a little more complete than the West right now. The West is kind of fun, you know, just because you never know what to expect out there. And the offenses sure do put up a lot of runs, but it just does seem to be lacking in those teams that you really feel comfortable with defining as fully formed units.
To me, it's not even so much that they're not complete teams, because who is a complete team in the country at this point? I don't know how many complete teams there are out there. You know, yeah, like Tennessee's been good to this point, and we'll definitely talk about the Vols more. And, you know, but like there just aren't that many of those teams. It's just that, like, this division that we expect to be the best in college baseball this year and was the best last year just has not lived up to that. And there are various reasons for why that's been the case. But I mean, you're looking at a Mississippi State team that already has three series losses. We're 5 weeks into the year. They have three series losses. You know, LSU has two losing weekends. A&M has two losing weekends. Auburn has two losing weekends. Alabama has two losing weekends, albeit against Texas and Florida. This is just where the division is, and these teams have all gotten here in unique ways. But it is just very interesting that we are here, that Ole Miss and Arkansas look like they're going to be fine and look to be very solid teams that can make it all the way to Omaha. But who is the third best team in the SEC West? I don't think we have anything close to a firm handle on that. And, you know, I expected instead to be talking about who is the fifth or the sixth best team in the SEC West, not who is the third best team.
Yeah. It's the other thing to remind SEC West fans who might be gripping a little bit about the early results of the season is that don't forget because you're in the SEC, all of your big picture goals are still very much attainable, because let's not forget that going 16-14 in the SEC is sometimes good enough to host. And, once you're hosting, you're kind of on the fast track. And so There's always a couple of teams that we get to the midpoint of SEC play and we're just convinced that, yeah, this team just probably isn't that good this year. And they kind of back their way into hosting and they kind of end up, you know, being right on the doorstep of some of their big picture goals they might have come into the season with. So one of the fascinating things that I find about the SEC is just that the season takes on this really, how to describe it, this really warped shape where you're really never too far from being right back in the thick of things. And in terms of the national conversation, you're also like never more than 2 or 3 weeks from being buried at the bottom of the standings because there's really no such thing as we talk in some conferences about, oh, their schedule's really front loaded or their schedule's really back loaded. That exists to some degree in the SEC. However, not nearly to the degree it exists in other leagues. And so you're never more than just around the corner from your next series that you're probably not going to win, you know, unless you're really among the elite in the country. And that's what kind of gives the SEC that, you know, the strange shape to their season year after year.
All right. We've kind of talked around Tennessee here enough. Let's talk Vols. For me, it was one of the most impressive performances of the weekend. You know, we talked about how good Louisville looked. Well, Tennessee looked incredibly good as well. The opponent wasn't as good. You know, South Carolina wasn't the number one team in the country, but it was a comprehensive sweep by Tennessee this weekend of a South Carolina team that was coming off of a series win against Texas. The Tennessee offense continues to just mash baseballs. They have 56 homers already this year. They hit 98 last year, and that was a lot. Like, that was a very good offense hitting a bunch of home runs. They're already at 56 in just 19 games to this point. So that's loud. But they're 20 games so far this season, excuse me. But the bigger thing to me is how well they've pitched. Last season, they had, you know, an ace in Chad Dallas, who was a top 5-round pick. They had a relief ace in Sean Hundley, who, you know, was an All-American caliber reliever. Those guys are gone. They also lost, another starter in Will Heflin to graduation. They came into this season expecting to have Blade Tidwell fronting the rotation. He has yet to pitch this year because of injury. So what they have returning is some key relievers, and those guys like Kirby Connell, Camden Sewell, and Redmond Walsh, you know, they've done what you expect them to do. But what Tennessee has been able to do while turning over the rotation and throwing two freshmen in the rotation and a third pitcher in Chase Dollander, who, transferred in from Georgia Southern. He's a sophomore. So they're throwing out two freshmen and a sophomore, none of whom have SEC experience. What they did this weekend was phenomenal. They finished the weekend with a one-hitter in a 10-0 win. The Vols this weekend held the Gamecocks to 5 runs on 11 hits. It was a superb weekend on the mound. And that to me is what most impressed me about this weekend for Tennessee.
Yeah, I think that's right. When I saw Chase Burns and Drew Beam in Houston at that tournament there, they both threw the ball really well. And you kind of, with really talented freshmen, I guess I'll put it this way, really talented freshmen, they'll flash like that, right? And you just kind of wonder, am I seeing, you know, just the flash, or is this something that is going to be a theme as the season goes on? And, you know, a few starts does not a season make, but it seems like that duo is really leaning towards it being the latter, and that these guys are just ready for this in a way that, you know, Blade Tidwell was more or less ready for last year. I mean, he faded a little bit down the stretch because he threw almost 100 innings as a freshman. And that, you know, by the way, will be something to watch with these two guys is, you know, are they really going to be able to run through the finish line, or will we see them taper off a little bit as not only the book gets out on them, but also they're just going to have an innings load greater than really anything they've had before to this point. So that will be obviously a factor to watch, but that really, the emergence of those two guys, in addition to the pieces that we knew they were going to have, you mentioned the bullpen guys. And you know, you had a pretty good feeling about Chase Dollander because he was pretty good at Georgia Southern last year. Those were relative certainties, but those two guys, I think, have really changed the way you can think about this Tennessee team, because the offense is great. That's absolutely true. I wrote about that after leaving Houston, but the pitching staff has held its own, to say the absolute very least. And this is a team that could beat you on the mound as well. And I don't think that was something I thought there were nights when Tennessee could beat you on the mound. You know, probably on a Friday night, right? When they use their top bullpen guys and, you know, whoever they're, we thought it was going to be Tidwell. But you know, maybe Dollander starts on Fridays and you just think, okay, those are the games they're going to win. And then the rest of the weekend, they're going to have to beat you off offensively. And that necessarily hasn't necessarily come to pass with this team. I think it's a, it looks like a really well-rounded team. They'll have continue to have week after week tests here, but so far it's a group that's just passed everything they've faced with flying colors.
Tennessee also, I think, has gotten some stink for their schedule early in the season. Yeah, they played Iona, and look, I didn't say anything positive about them playing Iona. And they played Rhode Island, and those two teams to this point are a combined 2-30. They were both winless for up until this weekend. I think Rhode Island won some games this weekend. But yeah, so they have those two things on the schedule. But this is also a team that went to Texas to play in the Shriners College Classic. They played three Big 12 teams, including at the time, number one Texas. They now have played South Carolina, and they played a Georgia Southern team that's 13-7 and is expected to compete in the Sun Belt. It's not a bad schedule. Like it's not a murderer's row, but you can't just write off what Tennessee is doing right now as a result of their schedule. Yeah, they had two weekends that, you know, against teams that have really, really struggled out of the gate. But the rest of the schedule has been pretty solid. And any lingering concerns about what Tennessee is or isn't are going to be resolved over the next 2 weeks. We keep touching on the fact that they play Ole Miss this weekend. Well, they follow that with a trip to Vanderbilt. So we're going to find out over the next 2 weeks what Tennessee can and can't be. These are obviously not only their two biggest tests to date, but they're going to be their two biggest tests of the regular season in all likelihood. So very excited about where Tennessee is and excited about what these next 2 weeks hold for the Vols. Joe, since I was in Baton Rouge and I saw A&M and I saw LSU play all weekend, might as well get some thoughts in there. What I saw this weekend from A&M was very good. They win the series. There were three close games, and A&M found a way to win on Friday and Saturday. They get the runs across in the ninth inning. Both of those games were tied going into the ninth, and A&M on the road finds a way to win. And I think there's a lot to be said just for that fact alone. I was also very impressed with the quality of at-bats that A&M had this weekend. The games all weekend were incredibly long. They played for about 5 hours on Saturday. And there are a lot of reasons for that. LSU ran through a lot of different pitchers. You know, there are reviews. There's all the rest of it. But part of the reason they played forever is because A&M kept fouling pitch after pitch off. They just really hung in there and had some really patient, really disciplined at-bats. And it really paid off for them. And Jim Schlossnagel told me, you know, they've had games where they've had, you know, that kind of approach throughout the season, but it hasn't been as consistent as it was this weekend. I mean, if A&M is going to start doing that, I think that they can really make some strides here. In terms of pitching, you know, A&M is still working some things together. It's LSU got to them. LSU is going to get to every single pitching staff they face this year, you feel like. So I wouldn't worry too terribly much about that. I would mostly just focus on the fact that A&M went on the road, first true road test of the year. They go on the road, they win a series. That's a big weekend for the Aggies. And then on the flip side, LSU did not play well at all this weekend, and yet they were in a position to win all three of these games. They got it done on Sunday. They pushed the go-ahead run across in the eighth inning. They were tied going into the ninth, both on Friday and Saturday. And Saturday required a big comeback for them to do it. But, you know, they were three close games. LSU didn't get it done at home, and that's tough. But I think considering how poorly LSU played, you know, they had two errors in every game this weekend, and they're fielding 951 on the season. That's a big talking point right now around LSU, but they walked 18 batters in the series. They were out hit on the weekend. Considering all of that, the fact that they were in position in the ninth inning in all three games to win, I think says a lot about where the ceiling for this team is if they're able to correct some of these issues in the pitching and defense. And, you know, time will tell how much they're able to correct the issues. Some of them, you know, like Jay Johnson said after the game, there's no free agency. The team is the team right now. And that's true. But they also, I feel like, you know, they're going to, LSU is going to go, Johnson said they're going back to the drawing board in terms of pitching. And what they're going to come up with ultimately, I think, is something that is not reliant on traditional starters, because LSU right now doesn't have guys that they can run out there for six, seven innings. So they're going to come up with something. And I would like to think that I will give them the chance. I think it can work, whatever it is they come up with, if they can find a way to put their guys in a position to be successful. And then defensively, I mean, it's probably never going to, this team this year is not going to become a pitching and defense team. And frankly, no LSU team under Jay Johnson is going to be pitching and defense centric, but this team specifically is absolutely not going to. But that doesn't mean that they have to field 950 all season long. So I think they can get better there and probably will get better. Where they go over the next 2 months is going to be fascinating to watch. But if they just make some moderate improvements, considering what they can be offensively, how quickly they can strike, how they can score runs in bunches, they don't need anything more than moderate improvements to become a real problem team for whoever draws LSU in a regional.
Yeah, I think that's all true. I mean,
I think they're defensively, I just think they're kind of stuck. Like they just are going to have to get better with the guys they have defensively. Because I'm not sure that you really want to move Jordan Thompson out of shortstop, right? And like, he's nine errors on the year. Like, he's been one of the guys who has struggled the most defensively. And we obviously know that Jacob Berry doesn't really have necessarily a natural landing spot. So like, I just think that the guys they have are the guys they have, and they're just going to have to try to make it work with that unit. So it does feel like, for better or worse, they are kind of stuck with what they have from a defensive alignment standpoint. On the mound, I do think that's interesting. Well, first of all, going back to the drawing board on the mound and not using traditional starters means that my condolences to the sizable LSU beat. Make sure you have a comfortable seat in the press box. Maybe bring like an extra cushion, support.
They tried traditional starters this week, and they played like a total of like, I don't know, 13 hours of baseball this weekend. So whatever it is, like, you know,
it's just going to be worse. Yeah, I mean, it's just a team that, like, I mentioned this after the Minute Maid tournament. I was like, I think this is just a team that's going to play a bunch of four-hour games, you know, because their games in Houston were slow, too. And, like, I am saying that as a bad thing. Like, as an observer, it is not fun. And, by the way, like, the coaches would rather not play that long either, like, in a perfect world. They're not choosing it necessarily. But if it's what you have to do, it's what you have to do, right? And I do think they're on the mound. Like, I think there have been some bright spots, you know, with, you know, Eric Raiselman has pitched well. And Samuel Dutton, I think, has pitched well. And you've got really guys who are just, you can bank on, like Devin Fontenot and Trent Vintmeyer, who have been just really solid throughout their entire careers. I do think there is a core there you can kind of piece around, but I will be fascinated to see what kind of comes of this unit, because I came out of seeing them, and I guess I'm curious for your thoughts as well, that just who on this pitching staff, if you were put in charge, if you were Jason Kelly, like, who would you be looking to as these are the core pieces of something we're going to put back together as a pitching staff? Because I just wasn't sure. There's some good stuff on this staff, right? You know, Ty Floyd, for example, great raw stuff. You know, Eric Raiselman at his best and healthy, great stuff. But who on the staff is someone who you look at as somebody who can go out in the SEC and really get outs on a consistent basis night after night? I was less sure about that when I saw them in Houston.
I mean, my question is, who has swing and miss pitches on this staff? I know they exist, but we didn't see them this weekend. particularly. And some of that's A&M's approach. They were determined to fight off anything. But again, the reason, part of the reason they played so long is that A&M was refusing to be put away. And that is something, whoever those pitchers are, like whoever has the best slider and whoever has the fastballs that can miss bats, like those are the guys that need to get highlighted. And, you know, we'll see what they come up with here, whether it's piggybacks, whether they're trying to open it, you know, whatever it is. I mean, maybe they do look at it and they just wind up with traditional starters. I don't think that's going to be the answer, because it sure wasn't the answer this weekend, but they, it will be very interesting to see what they come up with this weekend in Florida. And oh yeah, by the way, LSU has to go to Florida this weekend. So whatever they're dealing with, they're going to have to deal with it against a really tough team on the road. And losing this weekend was far from optimal for a number of reasons, but I think the biggest reason is that, you know, you lost a home series against the team that finished last, or second to last, whatever A&M was last year in the SEC West. And, you know, the way the West is this year, we talked about it, it doesn't look like a gauntlet right now, but, you know, you still can't be missing opportunities in home series, because you got to get these wins somewhere. And in the SEC, it's just not easy to do that.
We talked earlier about Louisville, just real quick. Their series went over series sweep of Notre Dame really kind of changes the trajectory there. I think a similar thing of A&M. They've got Auburn at home, then they go on the road to take on Alabama, then they've got Kentucky at home the next three weekends. Those are, I mean, if they can do this to LSU and Baton Rouge, like they can win all of those series. So this is an opportunity for A&M to really kind of make some hay and put themselves in a position where they have their wind at their back when they get to the difficult portion of their SEC schedule, because that is coming. But it's not really necessarily coming these three weekends on the spectrum of SEC series. Now, those three teams are also looking at A&M and saying, like, yes, they did this against LSU, but that's a team that we feel like we can win a series against. So maybe they're more toss-ups, but if A&M is going to be a regional team, I think they're going to make their hay these next three weekends.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I don't think that, you know, you can, if you're an A&M fan, you should not be penciling in three straight or four straight series wins to open SEC play. First of all, it usually doesn't work like that. Second of all, yes, like those teams are also looking at A&M. But this specific week, they go home, or they go to Rice on Tuesday, and then they go home to Auburn. This is a real chance to build on what momentum you built at Baton Rouge this week. A&M has to have a good week. They have really struggled this season to string together anything. If you look at their schedule, it's a bunch of like win two games, lose a game, win two games, lose a game, win a game, lose two games. It's a bunch of that. They can't do that this week. They really need to go out and get three wins this week and get something rolling here as we start to edge towards April. All right, Joe, quickly, Georgia won a series against Mississippi State. This was maybe the strangest SEC series of the weekend. Georgia won on Friday night, 11-0. Jonathan Cannon was outstanding. Then the two teams played a 13-12 game on Saturday, which Georgia won. And then Mississippi State won 20-3 on Sunday. I don't know what to make of that. Quickly, what do you make of that?
Well, it's a great question. I think that it shows, I think that the biggest thing I took from it is that Georgia is capable of winning ugly, because I was less sure of that coming into the weekend. And I think in the SEC, unless you're, you know, Vanderbilt the last 2 years, or, you know, just one of these teams that really runs the gauntlet in the SEC and puts up a gaudy record, like, for the most part, you're going to have weekends in the SEC where you have to win ugly. And I wasn't sure that Georgia had necessarily had that in them. Like, could they win games when Jonathan Cannon pitched really well? Absolutely. You know, can they win games 4-2 when things go right? Sure. But them winning that middle game of that series ugly the way they did, showed me that they're kind of capable of winning that kind of slugfest and taking some haymakers and returning them, to use that metaphor. That's a skill, I think. Well, first of all, I think that is a skill. It's also something I wasn't quite sure Georgia had in its arsenal. So the idea that they do, I think, makes me feel a little more optimistic about their ability to really fight through the SEC schedule. And that's kind of what I said leading into the weekend, where, first of all, if Mississippi State has any sort of like high-end ceiling left, I think we might see it this weekend against a team like Georgia that I thought was just kind of a really nice, above-average SEC team. We obviously did not see that, although Mississippi State did blow them out on the Sunday game, like you mentioned. But then on the flip side, I mentioned that, you know, if for Georgia, this is really an opportunity to kind of do something they haven't always done, which is, you know, win a series against a team like this that feels like it's maybe in a similar position in the SEC, in a similar place in the pecking order, even though one team is ranked and one's not. And they did that. So I'm with you in that I don't, because of the ugliness of it and because of just the general wonkiness of it, where you have a blowout on either end and then a slugfest in the middle, I never really know what to do with those kinds of series. And oh, by the way, it felt like we had a few of those this weekend. Shout out Wake and Georgia Tech. I think Miami and Clemson was the same way. I never know exactly what to do with that, but I will just say that I liked seeing Georgia able to win a game in that way. I wouldn't have necessarily bet on that coming into the series.
Let's head out west. The series is still in progress because they started on Saturday, playing Saturday to Monday. It are Arizona and Stanford, but we already have, we know who wins the series because Arizona went out and won the first two games in Tucson. They won 3-2 on Saturday night. That game had a crazy finish with Mac Bingham throwing out the potential tying runner at the plate to end the game in the ninth inning. And then on Sunday, Arizona comes back, wins the series with a five-run comeback in the eighth inning to go ahead and claim the victory, kind of stunning Stanford there in heartbreaking fashion the last couple of days. Big series win for Arizona, a really tough series loss for Stanford, which has now lost its first two Pac-12 series of the season. Stanford really needs a win here on Monday. If they, if they could get out of town at 2-4, that just is going to feel a whole lot different than 1-5. But really entertaining series to this point. Fantastic finishes in both games, and Arizona comes out with a really big series win.
Stanford's going to like pay me to stop. Well, they're going to pay me to just stay glued to their games, because in both of these games, I was watching it. Stanford had a lead late, and because they were taking a lead into the late innings, I was kind of, I kind of started to drift towards other games. This was especially true yesterday, where, you know, Stanford gets a run in the seventh and then two runs in the eighth, the runs in the eighth on home runs for Carter Graham and Braden Montgomery. And it's 5-1. And I'm like, okay, like I'm going to flip to something like another Pac-12 game. Cause at that point it was later in the afternoon. And then of course I was like shocked to see that Arizona ended up winning that game, just cause it felt pretty over at 5-1. Right. The night before was a little different cause it was only 2-0. But even then I was flipping between things and was surprised, you know, I missed the full Arizona comeback there. So Stanford's going to, I can be bought Stanford, by the way, to just like sit there and watch all your games without flipping back and forth. But if you're Stanford, you have to be demoralized that they did the thing that we thought they needed to do, right? Like Alex Williams was awesome in the first game of the series on Saturday with his seven innings, and they, you know, Susak got on base but didn't have any hits, and they held Arizona's lineup to six hits, and you know, two of those six came from their nine hitter. So like, okay, that's, you know, not ideal, but it's, you know, you're not letting their best guys beat you. And then even the next day, Quinn Matthews was pretty good, was pretty solid when you consider how good the Arizona offense is.
I mean, he got into the eighth inning really well. The line doesn't look amazing because the comeback started against Quinn Matthews, but like he got into the eighth inning with a four-run lead.
Yeah. So they did everything we asked them to do, and it just didn't matter. Like Arizona just had comebacks in the bag. And sometimes that happens. But so if you're Stanford, it's one of those classic, you know, you feel pretty good because you were right in both games. You were winning both games. You, depending on your definition of it, it seemed like they had those two games wrapped up. But on the other hand, you didn't win them. And now you're, to your point, they really, it really does feel like they need to win on Monday.
Because they're 9-7 right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and the resume, you know, really at this point, like they beat Arkansas in that, in the Round Rock tournament. And, you know, that's, you know, we had a little bit of a debate about where to put them, obviously from losing the series, but also just from like, what are they hanging their hat on at this point? So like, it's another team that we really believe in the talent, but the results just aren't necessarily there.
From an Arizona perspective, you know, you talked about with Georgia not knowing if they could win ugly. I think this was big, learning that Arizona could win some low scoring close games. And it seems like Arizona's starting to find its core on the mound. TJ Nichols was really, really good in game one, held Stanford to 2 runs on 8 hits and 8 innings. Garrett Irvin delivered a quality start on Sunday. And I mean, that's kind of just what we expect Garrett Irvin to do. They found some guys in the bullpen. Holden Christian has 2 saves, and Trevor Lawn on Saturday picked up his first career save. He did give up his first runs of the season on Sunday, but it seems like those are the two bullpen arms they want to get to the most. And I mean, so you're just starting to see some things click together pitching wise for Arizona. And that's big because this is a team that we figure is going to score runs. Their offense isn't clicking on full cylinders right now, but you know, I figure that that's going to come, and they have the pieces to do it. But if they can find a way to win some of these close, low scoring games in the Pac-12, that's going to be huge for them going forward as they try and compete for a Pac-12 title.
Yeah. I think TJ Nichols, you mentioned him. I think, you know, what he did this weekend was big because he had been very solid to start the season. You know, the numbers were pretty good. You know, he'd done everything they'd asked for him. He had a little bit of a rough start against Cal, but it wasn't an apocalyptically bad start. But I don't know that I ever voiced this on the podcast because I didn't want to jump to a conclusion, but I was starting to wonder, is he going to dominate though? Like, is he just going to be pretty good and not dominate? Because there's a difference there. Like, a pretty good starter, you know, wins you a lot of Pac-12 games and has, you know, a sub-3 ERA and, you know, looks pretty good on the stat sheet, but then gets to a super regional or gets to Omaha and you realize very quickly that he's not on the level of some of the teams you're going to end up facing in those big games. But what he showed in his start against Stanford this week was a little more of that dominant side. You know, he gets into the ninth inning, couldn't finish it, but 8 strikeouts, that's the most he's had other than a start against Milwaukee earlier. And obviously Stanford and Milwaukee are two very different teams. So I really thought he took a step forward in terms of showing that he's, you know, took a step up from where he'd been earlier this season, because I was starting to wonder if, you know, he was going to be good, not great this season. And I think he kicked the door ajar a little more to show that he could be great.
Before we wrap this podcast up, let's go back to the ECC. Let's finish where we started, but, you know, close in the circle. We talked about Louisville and Notre Dame already. Some other intriguing results around the conference. Florida State won a series against North Carolina State. That was a very late affair. They played a doubleheader on Sunday because of some bad weather on Friday, and it took 17 innings, but Florida State finally did dispatch with the Wolfpack to win the series. Wake Forest went to Georgia Tech and won a series. They won 27-7 on Saturday, and they won on Friday behind a good start from Rhett Lauder before Georgia Tech won in a rout on Sunday. You had UNC going down Tobacco Road, down 15-5-1, actually, as it were, to beat Duke. And UVA keeps rolling offensively, and Miami goes to Clemson and wins a road series. Joe, from that, What did you like? What did you learn this weekend?
You know, I really was interested in Wake Forest winning that series over Georgia Tech the way they did. And I think you and I agonized quite a bit over leaving Wake Forest out of the top 25 because, you know, it kind of came down to, do we bring in Miami? Do we bring in Wake Forest? We ultimately decided Miami's total body of work, just a little bit better than what Wake Forest had. But I think you and I are kind of inclined to think that maybe Wake Forest is the better team of the two when it comes right down to it. You know, when you combine this with how well they played Florida State to begin ACC play, it seems just incredibly clear that this is a team that is has already shown. Like, I was going to maybe caveat that a little bit. There's still a lot of season left. That is true. But I mean, they've already done more this year than they showed last year in terms of what they're capable of. And another test coming this weekend against Virginia. I'm looking forward to getting out to Winston-Salem for some of that series. That's another big one. It, you know, if they can play well in that series, I mean, winning it, it would be great. But I mean, even just playing well in that series, I think would continue to prove that point. But to slug with Georgia Tech, I mean, that's impressive stuff. And I think on the flip side of that, Georgia Tech's pitching woes, it just makes me want to scream into a pillow, frankly, you know, and you like smush your face into a pillow and just scream so nobody can hear it. Like, man, that offense is so good. And man, they really struggle to find a pitcher who can string together outs. Like, it's just such a struggle. And it's, you see the potential, how many games they could win if they even just had like an average pitching staff. And they're, it's just such a you can hear the frustration in my voice because it's just, there's just always this constant cycling through guys to try to find the guy who can get outs on a given day. And it just seems like they're never really quite sure who that ends up being. So the other thing I would say about, I think it says some good things about Miami. Miami, it tends to be this kind of team, but that was a road series win. That's big. It's typically a team that plays pretty well in Coral Gables, is a lot more inconsistent on the road. I guess maybe the jury is still out on Clemson to a greater degree than maybe we thought, but I think that's still a team we think is improved, and it's a road series and what's typically a pretty good environment in Clemson. I think that's a positive step forward for this Miami group and maybe trying to do something they don't often do, which is be more consistent on the road.
Yeah, I thought that was big that they did this on the road. They hadn't been on the road really to this point this year, and they went out and they handled it just fine at Clemson. The thing that stood out to me for Miami this weekend was the way they pitched, both for good and for bad. Carson Palmquist bounced back from a rough outing a week ago. He was really good on Friday night in the win. Carson Ligon has spent like the last 2 weeks in the rotation now, maybe it's 3 weeks, the last couple weeks in the rotation in any event. And he's been very good. And it seems like they found something in him. And Miami held the Tigers to one run on Saturday in that win. And then on Sunday, Clemson scored 20 runs. And this happened so many times this weekend that there's just this one weird outlier game in the series. You know, Clemson scored 20 on Sunday. Mississippi State scored 20 on Sunday. Wake scored 27 on Saturday. Oregon State scored 20-something on Friday. UCLA scored 25 on Friday. And these teams didn't do anything close to that the rest of the weekend. So I don't know what got into college baseball this weekend. But specific to the Miami pitching staff on Sunday, they had Alex McFarland going on Sunday. Clemson started that offensive onslaught against him. Clemson also eventually got to Alejandro Rosario, who was Miami's opening day starter, but you know has since been taken out of the rotation. And so I don't know whether that's a one-off or whether that's something indicative of going forward for Miami that they really need to shore up. But the Miami pitching staff started the weekend so well and then got punched real hard on Sunday. And it just seems like they're still trying to find the right pieces there So that's one thing I'm looking at with the Hurricanes moving forward.
Yeah, I don't want to give too
short shrift to North Carolina because they, you know, they kind of continue to impress. They're now inside the top 15, 17-3 overall. They're 5-1 in their first six ACC games. You know, Duke and Pitt do not represent the best of the ACC at this point. However, that is pretty impressive to take care of them with such little drama. The offense continues to be more physical than they were last year. I think that's something that we latched onto pretty quickly this year is, hey, you know, this does look like a different offense. And so, and that's really with, you know, by the way, Alberto Osuna's hit some home runs, but he's sitting 250 and has a really high strikeout rate, and Mac Horvath is hitting 200. So even with those two guys, different varying degrees of struggling, they've really had a pretty good offensive attack even without them. You know, the freshman Vance Honeycutt, 8 home runs so far this season. That's pretty impressive. You know, 14 stolen bases for him. He's just been so dynamic at that leadoff spot. And, you know, the question now becomes like, is his floor is clearly very high for what he can do this season, but is the floor is like what Justice Thompson maybe was last year, where Justice Thompson got off to just an incredible start, tailed off as the season went on, but was still ultimately one of their better offensive pieces. That feels like the floor. That's a pretty doggone good floor. You know, but this is a guy that is, you know, already has his eye on, you know, freshman All-American type stuff. That's the type of season he's already having. And it's just been a huge piece of turning this Carolina team from a team that like really was just stuck in neutral offensively for large stretches last year into a group that does feel like a dangerous unit overall.
Alrighty. Very intriguing stuff around the conference. The ACC remains very interesting. And hey, if the SEC isn't going to eat up all of the spots in the top 25, the ACC so far at least is stepping up and taking theirs as both Wake Forest and Miami move into the top 25 this week, joining a bevy of their conference mates. So Louisville moved in too. Not Wake Forest, Louisville and Miami. It's been a long day. It's been a long weekend. Anyway, that's going to do it for us on the Baseball America College podcast, in part because I have a flight to catch soon, and in part because we got through what we needed to get through. You can check out plenty more over at baseballamerica.com. You got the full top 25 off the bat, all the usual stuff wrapping up the weekend. You can also read Joe's dispatch from Wilmington on Saturday. He saw the Seahawks against Ohio State, and I wrote about Texas A&M over the course of the weekend as well. So make sure to check all of that out over at baseballamerica.com. We'll have plenty more coming throughout the week as well. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy BA. And make sure you're following the Baseball America podcast on your favorite podcasting app, be that Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us and make sure you are subscribed because we go twice a week during the season, here on Mondays, wrapping up the weekend, and then on Thursdays, previewing the weekend to come. This weekend to come is a very, very big weekend. We mentioned Ole Miss and Tennessee. That's definitely the highlight. You also have some intriguing ACC series. You have the Big 12 really starting conference play in earnest. There was one conference series this week. Obviously, we didn't get to it here on the podcast with TCU and Baylor, but the rest of the Big 12 gets into conference play this week. And it starts with a blockbuster as Texas is headed to Texas Tech. So a lot happening across the country next weekend. So we'll have all of that preview content for you in your favorite podcasting app on Thursday. So be sure to check that out. Until then, for Joe, I'm Teddy. Thank you for listening.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator.
Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.